This is Rocked.
Wow. Round 15. Here we go. Rocked. Round 15 brought to us by our good friends at PowerBoxBoxing.com. And you are looking unequaled, unsurpassed.
In my PowerBox threads.
In your PowerBox threads. And, you know, you talk about boxing and we talk about mainstream and then we talk about great Australian stories. And if I hear men at work, I come from a land down under. Yeah, where women mourn and make thunder. I can't sing, but. And the whistle.
Yeah.
Every time this man's face comes into my mind and what he's done for Australian sport and Australian boxing and great Australian rivalries. It's a very, very warm welcome to a great friend, a great family friend, the Jet, I call him, Denny, the Green Machine Green. Welcome to Rock Round 15, Mark Warren and JJ Rocker. Welcome and thank you for your time.
G'day, boys. Hey, Giddens. G'day, JJ. Giddens, that was almost as good as some of the entrances I had when you were announcing, mate.
Well, I only got to do that a couple of times. I think I did Brad Mayo on the undercard.
Yeah. You did, mate.
Zuleya.
And then, unfortunately, not unfortunately, but you celebrated a little bit too much with this.
Is that right?
I don't know about
well,
that.
Well, no, in the ring.
Oh.
In the ring, like, you know, you're the ring announcer that we wanted, and you come over, yeah.
Blurred the lines.
That's pretty true. Jimmy Lennon, I did the undercard, and Mr. Lennon did the main event. I thought when you talk celebrating with me, my God, we've got some stories, and we're not going to go blow for blow too much, but we might go there a little later, but we've certainly got some memories.
We got to get into it, mate.
Yeah, and we actually did ringside commentary for Chris John. Featherweight of the decade.
Of course.
Indonesian rock star actually, he reminds me of you. I'm just throwing away the script. The other day here in the studios with Rod, the producer, I'd just been man-fated. I just had some manscaping and I'm into manscaping. And fast forward, we sat down at ringside. Here's the memory for you, the Marina Bay Sands. And I've gone, Greeny, I got no product. And back then, as you can see, he's not groomed today. No scaping for Green. But back then, he was hair perfect.
Yeah.
You'd be very proud of this man when it came to his hair, right?
Of course.
Hey, kittens, just quickly, sorry to interrupt me, because you'll get back to it in depth.
Yeah.
Mate, I had the short bag and sides, had the Marine cut. And then I would literally get my hands, I'd get a hunk of product, I'd go boop, 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 boop. And that was it. It literally took me 15 to 20 seconds to do my hair every day. Maybe 25 seconds max when I wanted to really look at. And that's it.
It's a good routine.
Well, I'm pretty much there because I do that because on this particular day I had no product. And I'm sitting with the Green Machine. So the Green Machine went, hang on a second, and he just did, bup, 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 and he wiped his hair, and then he's got me. And he started to use his product into my hair. So it was a highlight for me. I had hair and makeup done by the Green Machine at ringside. Improv.
Very special.
You remember that?
It was a classic something about Mary moment.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Can I read out this? Can I? Because we do this to anyone that's been on the show that's got a fair fight CV, and it reads this way. 41 pay for punch, 36 wins, 28 by way of KO with 5 losses. The former WBA light heavyweight champion of the world. The former 2-time IBO light heavyweight champion of the world. The former WBC interim super middleweight champion of the world, presenting from Perth, Western Australia, the Green Machine, Danny Green. Bang. The right hand over the top. That was punch perfect. That was punch perfect.
Brings back great memories, buddy. Brings back some of the most electric and incredible moments where I've never, ever felt more alive was just when you were doing that and when the ring announcer, whoever it was, you back in the day or whoever it may have been, when they were doing that, I never felt more alive at that moment. You know, you're just jacking. Your heart rate is you're trying to keep your heart rate to that, but your mind and everything else is just going 100 miles an hour and you are fucking revving. But you're just going, cool, I got this, no problem, let's get this on. You just want to, you're literally bursting. It's kind of, it's an incredible feeling.
Meet my 24-year-old turning 25.
25 turning 26.
26 even. Well, there's no, well, I'm minus five plus three. however, I'm still single. Any ladies out there, you can apply it. No. Anyway, but this young man, he's my 25 turning 26 counselor, and he is an old soul. And we talk about mental health a lot. We had Garthy on last episode talking mental health and greening. We've talked very openly, very brutally about mental health. You've done some great things I'll also come to as well, the coward punch. Hold that thought. Mm. But in regards to you touched on it there. This is a bloke that thrived on a pressure cooker. This is a bloke that thrived on a crowd. This is a bloke that sent Australian sports fans nuts.
Well, just quickly, kittens, I just was handed a coffee by my lovely wife,
Nina. That's Priscilla. You know, how old was
Priscilla, he said.
Priscilla. another story coming your way wherever you're.
I wouldn't have been able to thrive without her. You know, I've been very blessed, very, very blessed to have you know, I'm a fucking chauvinist, and you know, it's I'm kind of raised old school. And when I say chauvinist, I'm just raised old school. You know, bloke stays, missus stays at home, raises the kids. Bloke is out working. We've progressed through the years, but I wouldn't have you know, been able to do what I did without the support of her and supporting of my family and the kids. You know, and the old saying, behind every great man, there's a great woman. Well, it does. It is absolutely true. It's been a partnership. In a partnership with us.
I love your relationship with Chloe and Archie too, but I know that Nina's responsible for those, the people that they're becoming fast and rapidly. And I mentioned Jeff and Kayla and Bo and Jess, and it's just great to see these little babies turn into young people and the job that their parents are doing.
Sorry to interrupt, getting started.
You're right. No. I'll come back to that train of thought. I remember I was talking about mental health, and I talked about him sending crowds. He rode. No disrespect to Danny, because he's an ultimate fighter, pardon the pun.
Absolutely.
But he, for me, he rode on this wave of emotion, because he'll tell you, underneath all that bravado, a lot of anxiety went with the journey, didn't it, Danny? The anxiety, you had to deal with that card as well very much.
Yeah, you know, it's I never went into the game of boxing to be famous, or to, you know, to have people know who you were. It's funny because I just wanted to fight. I wanted to be a champion. I wanted to be a world champion. I was like, man, when I was 18, and from the age of 10, I wanted to be a fighter. And then I started karate and kickboxing, but I never, you know, never. I always wanted to box, but just didn't know where in Perth. And then when I had my first amateur fight when I was 18, after a couple of kickboxing fights, I never looked back, and I just wanted to be a fighter, and I just wanted to be a winner. So I never did it for the fame or the other shit that goes with it. That was part and parcel of the career, and I was obviously savvy enough to realize to embrace it and enhance it and go with it. But it was a lot of times, and still I find it difficult. In crowds, sometimes I spin out. You know, I sometimes just spin out and go, fuck, I just want to get out of here, man. Like, it can be so intense. Mm. And people, especially when people are drunk and they're grabbing you, they're touching you, and they're grabbing you, like, come here, come here, and this person, come here, hey this, bang, 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 bang. Because I was generally always pretty fit, your mind's pretty switched on, you're very hyper-vigilant to what's going on. So I can see what some guy's thinking. I can feel what some guy's thinking. I can hear what some lady's saying there. I can feel this guy pull me here. I can know what's going on. And I'll have to endure 2 or 3 hours of it potentially at some appearances or things that I did. And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of occasions where I just wanted to get out of there. Yeah. And I had to just go and just calm myself down and go, man, you just got to fucking do this. You ain't got no choice. Just chill and be relaxed and go with it. And when I get out of there, like particularly after weigh-ins for me were, I think a lot of people thought that I was, my mom thought that I was a real prick. And I can understand why they would think that, because they've never, or not that, not most people haven't been in the shoes that a fighter has been in at the big stage, where everyone's looking at you. You walk in the room, everyone's just looking at you, and they're just staring at you. And I don't want to sound like a wanker. I hope I don't sound like a knob, but it's not, I'm not meaning because I'm special. Just they're there to watch you weigh in, they're there to see your fight. So there's a big crowd, and all eyes are on you. and you feel it. And you walk in and you do your job and you get off and you've been away from your family for 6 to 8 weeks. You've been pumping the training. You've got a broke, you might have a broken nose, you might have broken ribs. You've been through an incredible amount of physical torture the last 6 to 8 weeks to get to that day. My house once was on the line. So when I was waiting against Roy Jones Jr., my house was on the line. You know, so there was a lot at stake and a lot of pressure. And then also to perform, and I was involved heavily in the promotions as far as, you know, I was hands-on in the promotions as well as training and as well as fighting. And then you get to the weigh-in and it's just full on, mate, and all you want to do is get on, weigh-in, and get the fuck out of there. But you can't. You got to hang around and you got to do some things. And I'll never be able to properly explain it unless someone has been there and done the exact same thing. And, yeah, guys will be able to, other fighters will be able to understand that, and maybe not. Maybe they go, okay, I'm cool with it. But for me, I often struggle with it, and that's probably why maybe at press conferences, weigh-ins, people would have thought, what a rude prick, what an arrogant prick. It's just I was dealing with shit internally. Just I just want to get in, do my job and get out of there without going boom and exploding, because there's so much pressure that builds up and builds up and builds up, and it comes to a crescendo. When the bell goes in the fight, that's when I'm totally relaxed and totally calm, because I'm on my own. There's only me and you, and that's it. I got nothing else to deal with. I just got to do my fucking job. And that's when I feel, that's when there's no noise. Stadium's going bananas, people going crazy, my corner. Angela Hyde is, you know, you can hear him from Timbuktu, and God love the bloke, and give me great instructions. But generally he actually wouldn't yell that a lot in fights, actually. He's really calm.
Well, it's no both, no use both of you yelling. There's no both both going nuts at the same time.
Yeah. And so when I got into the ring and the bell went, that was when I was really, really calm. And because there was nothing to contend with, mate. All the other shit's done, the peripheral shit's outside of me. That was the quietest time in my life when the fight was going on.
And in terms of the role that boxing played in your life, in terms of dealing with those mental hurdles, how much did you use the sport and the training sessions as therapy?
I still do, JoJo. I was in here last night. I'm in a 2-week lockdown at home isolation because I was in Queensland weekend before last. I was nowhere near the hotspots, but I was up in Richardor doing something for my 12-round fitness franchise. So my daughter and I both are in a 2-week lockdown.
Wow.
So I was in the gym last night till 10 o'clock. Started about 8 o'clock and just kept in here. The night before, same thing, in with my boy first, and my boy comes in, he does a bit of training with me, he goes in an hour and a half, I'm still in it. But I would always use the most enjoyable times of my life, apart from times that I've had surfing with my mates and my son, or time with my family or holidays or whatever moments, like great times with your friends and family, special moments. The best times of my life that I can remember, and I wish I could go back to it like that, was training camps. When I was in training camp and I was just there to do a job, and kind of most days were not routinely set out, because my life's never going to be routine. And in training camp, anything can happen. You can get injured, you can go up and down. For me, it was the best time of my life because I knew that I was training. I knew I was getting my body right. My mind was switched on and focused onto something. There wasn't a lot else going around me, although, you know, I was always very hands-on, so I had a bit of shit going on. But that was the best times of my life, was when I was in training camp, and then the lead up to the fight. It was so exciting and everything. I was at peace then. That's when I was like, yeah, cool. Probably not to my family and my missus and everyone, because I was probably uptight and stressed and whatever, and probably dealing with anxiety when I didn't even know it, what it was, you know. And I just caught uptight and cranky and grumpy or whatever, and tired and sore. But, you know, there was a lot more going on. But that was the best times, just chilling. And so training and boxing has been a saviour for me personally. My wife will tell you without doubt, and I know for a fact if I hadn't found boxing, I wouldn't be here. No fucking way.
Wow. This is rocked. Mate, I'll come back, just some serious stuff. I'm searching. Chloe and yourself, you're in lockdown. I'm looking for a series on Netflix and Stan. What can you recommend?
Oh, man, if I had a 24-hour camera on us, you'd have a bit of entertainment. But we clash bad, man.
We clash.
And then we get on so well and then we clash, you know. Yeah. It's how it is. Yeah. I don't know, man.
That's all right.
I've been watching a bit of Oh, what's your legit? Yeah, all the same old shit, man. There's not much I can really. I love space. I love outer space and space movies and that kind of stuff. I'm fascinated. If someone said to me, you want to go to the moon tomorrow, I'd take the punt. I'd love to go. It's always fascinated me. It's probably why everyone calls me a space cadet.
Wow. You want to go to space? Lost in space. I remember you're too young for Lost in Space, but I remember Lost in Space. Do you remember Lost in Space?
Warning, Will Robinson.
That's it. Warning, Will Robinson. Archie.
Yeah.
How old's Archie?
He's 13. Turned 13 late December last year.
You got him surfing. I see him skating. Are you going to let him fight? Because he's very handy with the fists.
I've been sparring with him the last 2 weeks every day. I've always done a lot of sparring with him. When I say sparring, I just touch and he loads up because he's a cheeky little bugger. He loads up. He gives me cheap shots. You know, the round goes and then he'll just give me one more. You know, we laugh. We have a lot of fun. But I've just been teaching him. I think he wants to fight. I think he may be a fighter.
Yeah.
He's kind of, and it's always been a natural progression for him since he could put gloves on. I reckon he would have been maybe 2 years old, a bit over two, and he could have these big Gramsci gloves on. He'd stand there, and one day, and I was just on the couch sitting like I'm now, and he was in front of me standing. I said, I put my hand up, and he just with his left hand went, boom. And I put my right hand up, and he just went, boom. Hit with the right hand. He went, bang. I never asked him or showed him. I put my left hand for a hook, and he went, bang, like that. I put my right hand up for an uppercut, and he's gone, bang. And that was day one. And I never showed him. He just watched what I've been doing, maybe watched TV shows, whatever it was. He just picked it up. And then since then, I've been training him a lot, but only when I say a lot, every day. Hey, come here, champ. Jab, bang. I might one punch a day. We might do 2 minutes. I might get him a roll or a punch. But every single day, every time I go near him, I'm always doing something with him, roughing him up, heckling him, rolling him, grabbing him, headlocking him, choking him, punching him, just, you know, preparing.
How old is he again? How old is he again?
He's 13.
13. And how old's Chloe?
She's 19.
Wow.
But Archie can punch like a Mack truck, man. He's got real power and he's like me, like I was. He's built like that.
Yeah.
But he got big mitts and he can punch, man. But he's got beautiful proprioception. So his awareness of where he is, where his weight is. Like he can close his eyes and hit the ball with the speed ball. Like he just knows because he's been doing it a little bit. But I'm just teaching him the basics and the foundations. But son, I said, son, if you're going to be a fighter, because you're going to have a big target on your back, unfortunately, mate. So if you're going to be a fighter, I don't want anyone having a shot at you. You're either going to be the best or you're not going to fight at all. There's no halfway. There's no middle for that. You're not getting brain damage for fuck all. It's a big, big, big decision. As a father, I don't want him. I said to my
wife, "Gotta be his dream, mate. It's got to be his dream." And I know what it's like, and so does JJ to walk in the shoes, in giant shoes. It's a big ask, and it's got to be your dream, and you've got to be ready. But having you know, we evolve, and having good teachers around you, including yourself, you'll know. You've already said it. You won't let him do it unless it's right. I think Nina will have the final say anyway.
I think Archie had the final say, to be fair, mate. I think stubbornness is in our genes well and truly, and I can only just be there. At the moment I've got control over him because he's 13. But I think when he gets to 18, 19, he'll be running his own show, which is great because it's what you want as a father. You want to have independence.
Has he expressed the desire to fight, though?
So the other day we were talking about it and we said something about, you know, you down the track you could – he's always spoken about fighting one of Anthony Mundine's sons. And, you know, and he said, I'll fight his son there, you know. So it's been a bit of a joke. Yeah. And then the other day, and then someone was talking about it and I think Nina said, he's got two or three sons, I think, by memory. And his oldest son's 17 and his one son that's the same age. I said, he's got a son my age, Dad. And then he said, there's another one, maybe 14, 15. And Archie Schroeder goes, I want to fight the old one. I want to fight the older son, Dad. That's who I want to fight.
God bless. Yeah.
So it runs in the family, those genes that compete. It's just competitiveness. But if he's going to be a fighter, he's got all the attributes to do it. But the number one thing that he's got to have, and that's got to be owned all on his own, is desire. If he doesn't have the desire, I will strongly oppose it. This is Rocked.
We talk about Great Australian Rivalries. The story will not be completed, JJ, about, and you're fascinated with the Mundine Green story as a where were you moment. But just stay on Arch for a second more. I remember you talking about how you and Mundine had not been face to face very often at all, if ever in public. And you relayed a story to me. I think you might have been living at Newtown at the time, and you had Archie with you as a little fella walking up. Take us that's and you met Anthony, and he had his children with him as well.
Might have been Chloe. That was Chloe. Yep, because Archie was born in 2007, and I was only staying in, and I was still staying in Newtown for a little bit there.
Yeah,
but it was Chloe. Yeah, but I the first time I ever saw Chock was out the front of a hotel. I went and saw Chock's first pro fight at the Greenwood Hotel here in WA. And I was about to go to the Olympic Games, and I was there watching against Gerard Zos. And then I'd not seen him. I turned pro after the Olympic Games, and I went over to Jeff and trained, and we started Bankstown and moved to Murrayfield. And so I'd never seen Chock in the flesh. About one day I was somewhere in the city by memory. I can't remember. It was in the city somewhere. And he was out the front of a hotel, and he was kind of leaning on the wall, just sitting there. Look, he's waiting for someone. And I walked past him. I went, for Anthony Mundine, you know, like him. I never said anything. He was very early in my career, and he didn't know who I was. And then the first time I ever saw the man again, if that was him, in the flesh, was when the referee was giving us our instructions to fight. We had separate weigh-ins, separate press conferences. I'd never seen. So I'd never seen the bloke in the flesh.
Wow.
Really. Until we fought that first time in 2006.
JJ, take us micro on that where were you moment, and I'm going to say it in front of a good friend, and he has his version. But at super middle, I've said to you many times, if he stays at super middle, if he just focused on super middle, Mundine could well have gone down as one of the great super middleweights of all time. Your recollections, because you were an Anthony Mundine fan, and the nation was split. The nation was split. The green machine, the tradies would take off the tool belt, grab a slab of beer, and rush home for their pay-per-view to watch Danny. And then Anthony's friends are doing the same, and they were ready for this Australian rivalry that we haven't seen in our generation, no. I don't think.
And I think the Mundine Green saga and rivalry will be the constant benchmark for any combat sport rivalry domestically that we'll see.
Yeah.
Their names, yours, Danny, and obviously Anthony's, will be synonymous with any great rivalry of well-matched talent in combat sports.
You said to me this morning, you said, wasn't it nice for Danny to acknowledge Chock's retirement on a social post? And I did. At the end of the day, I think that was Greeny saying, well done, caps off to you. He had a remarkable career, Danny. Although, as we get older, we usually go up in weight. He wanted to show us that he could do something different. But that's Anthony Mundine. You fought him at his absolute peak of his powers.
Mm. Yeah, man. The guy, there's so much to say. Mm. There's so much to say with Chock, you know, and it was a fantastic rivalry, a sporting rivalry. The media really drummed it up and created a lot of animosity between the community, really. And Chock didn't help it. And Chock said some ridiculous things. And I think he might have regret some of the things that he said. I think he would, especially as he matures, I think he'll regret some of the things. Some of the things he said I agree with. So he was saying some things that I'm like, yeah, he's fucking on the money there. So, you know, some of the things he said were kind of crazy. But the media really beat up our rivalry, and it was fantastic. It worked for both of us. And people could say, I got asked a question last night. I was doing a podcast, a Zoom call to some young swimmers that needed a bit of a rev up. So give them a chat. And one of them asked, are you a Mundine mates? Is it all fake? I've been asked that question, I would say, 500 times. And I'm not exaggerating. 500 times in 20 years or 15, 18 years since the rivals. Is it fake? Because our rivalry is genuine. It's the real deal. I'll go to my grave knowing that I'm a better fighter than Chock. He'll go to his grave knowing that he's a better fighter than me. And that's how it is, and that's real. That's competitiveness, not really personal. He pissed me off and cheesed me off a few times. That's life, and I've pissed and cheesed him off a few times. That's life. But it's not personal. There's a great deal of respect there for each other, without doubt. There always has been from my end. I've always been public in acknowledging the benefit of him being in our sport, in his sport, in the sport of boxing, coming from, he's a fucking, people got to get their head around the fact that he's not a rugby league player turned boxer. The guy's a fighter.
Absolutely.
He's an absolute fighter. He comes from an incredible pedigree. So I think the people in rugby league should be going, man, we had a fighter start out in our sport first.
Yeah.
It's the other way around. He's a fighter before he's a rugby player.
That's flipping it.
Yeah.
That's flipping it. Is. You know what? Well, he'll also
look at the length of the careers.
Absolutely.
Well, and look what was achieved in the careers.
Oh, well, no, we have done Anthony, and he was so funny because when he talks rugby league, he's the same, but he means it. Don't worry about Fred Fittler. Don't worry about Laurie Daly.
Who are they?
Don't worry about my brother, Matty Johns. I was the greatest rugby league player of all time. And he said, I schooled those boys. They know it. He's so good.
I feel he was a fighter that was, doing rugby league before he kind of realised that his calling was to be a fighter. And people go, when you're hearing reports, media reports about Mundine being or do you want to do what that footballer did, what Anthony Mundine did? You know, he's the most successful footballer crossover player athlete. Yeah. I disagree with people saying that. He's a born and bred fighter. Yeah. He found rugby league and did incredible in that sport, but he was always a fighter before he was a rugby league player. That's my opinion anyway.
I was in year five
when
the pair of you fought, and I remember clearly in primary school sitting down with my mates one Friday afternoon and the Man vs. Machine commercial came on. And in year five, without knowing anything that was going on a political level or the show business level or the antics that was the Man vs. the Machine, I knew that these two titans were going to fight each other. And it was very divided then. So take me back to those.
The 17th of May, 2006, the Sydney Football Stadium as it was. I remember sitting ringside with Michael Slater. See, where were your moment? You just know exactly where you were. I remember crossing and going through Moore Park and taking a seat and going, wow. And I'd say to Anthony, I was a green machine. I was, Team Fennec. I was very much a Danny Green fan. And my wallet said the same on that night. And I was wrong on that night. And again, there's different versions, but there is no doubt that Mundine turned on a boxing display. But take us back to that date.
I want to hear about the lead up first, because as being in year five, I was 11 at the time. I missed that build up. You had obviously been in very high profile fights prior to that. Was that next level, that Mundine build-up?
Yeah, it was pretty hysterical. I remember driving to the venue that night, driving down, the road that comes off the road that goes to from Newtown.
Yep. JJ, I'll help you here.
Heads through, it was going back out for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
As you're heading down King Street and you're heading towards the city, you go to Broadway.
Yep.
That right-hand turn, that's a T.
Cleveland.
The park.
Cleveland Street.
Yeah. Cleveland Street. Yep. Famous.
So you're going into Chock's neighbourhood now. Yeah. There you're going into Chock's neighbourhood.
It's the backyard.
I was often around there. I was always around Cleveland Street because I was only up the road in Newtown. So heading down Cleveland Street, we drove past a few venues on the way, and then we did a UE around somewhere. The driver did a UE somewhere and went past about two or three pubs on the way that were decent sized pubs. And there was barricades around in the road. So there was cones around the road where they cordoned off the road. They had security guards on the cones, and they had people that were spilled out of the pub onto the street, and the street, they were like this on the street. And I'm driving on the street, we've got the music going. And I'm thinking to myself, fuck, this is a pretty big deal, It's pretty rad. I've never seen this before. We drive past another pub and they're spilled out of the pub and they're secure and there's chaos, there's lights flashing because there's trouble going on. Fuck, it's on here. She's on, kind of took myself out of it a little bit and just was focused on doing my job. But the whole lead up started in 2001. I beat a fighter called Heath Stenton. And I think Chock went 8 or 10 rounds, and I put Heath away in 2 rounds. And he was perfectly matched for my style, Heath. And the reporter said something about, you know, to Mundine after that happened. You went the distance with Mundine and with Heath Stanton, and Green knocked him out in two rounds after one of his fights. What do you think of this Green? And he just chop style. Green is a bum. He's no one. Old school and blah, blah. Almost enough with Jack. Chop style. And so then I was asked, what do you think about that on radio? I went, yeah, cool, no worries. I'll fight the guy. It's, you know, if he thinks I'm a bum, let's sort it out. And it went from there. It was really organic. It wasn't like it was a procured, manufactured thing. It was really organic, and it just fucking happened. It happened to be that Chock was an Aboriginal Muslim and I was a white supposed Christian. I'm a fucking atheist. So, you know, and I was, and Chock called me the corporate white man's figure. Well, I left school and did my apprenticeship as a carpenter, and then Chock walked out of school and into a pretty large rugby league contract. So, you know, it was all skew with as far as the perceptions of what we both were. And Chock didn't know me. I didn't know Chock at all. So this whole rivalry the media had kind of created and really pushed it. And there was a lot of animosity between camps. I remember we had to have separate weigh-ins and separate, we had press conferences, and we were kind of away from each other because, I've got to be fair, a lot of guys in his side, and I'm not sure whether many of those guys are around in 2006, there's a lot of that going on, a lot of lip. And I was like, you know what, I'd love for the cameras and everyone just to disappear, everyone leave this room and just leave us in here. Just leave us in here. And the guys with the biggest lips, you all walk up first. Let's get down and do it. I would have fucking loved that, mate. Because I can guarantee those ones with the lip, they would have shat in their pants. They would have pissed in their pants and they would have ran. Yeah. If we shut the doors and no one else, and it was all bets are off, anything goes in here, boys. Oh man, it would have been. I'd had a smile on my face and kick back and enjoyed what was going to go down.
I don't think you're just talking about those people at that press conference. You're talking about any fight press conference around the world. Take away the cameras, and whether it's Danny Green or another fighter, you take away empty vessels, make the most noise sometimes, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And this wasn't even aimed at Chock. You know, Chock was the man doing the show. It was just some of the clowns around him at that stage. I don't even know who they were. I can't remember them, mate. But that was creating a lot of animosity and a lot of friction, which didn't need to be that way. But there's so much, mate, this could go on and on, this conversation. But at the end of the day, you know,
you're in the sheds. I'll fast forward it for you. You're in the sheds and a sellout crowd. I'm not making excuses or necessary alibis. You struggled hard for weight. Take that aside, though. Going to the ring for Mundine Green 1, what are your memories?
My main memory is being in tears before the fight, having taped a photo of my late niece who passed away on the 8th of March. She was 4 months old, my brother's daughter. And that's why we postponed the fight. I should have postponed the fight for a year because, you know, you look back and you can't explain it. And I was just in tears. And then, boom, the door kicks open and we walk out and I go to the ring. It's kind of like I was up on the lighting tower watching what was going on. So I had just so much pressure, and I had the pressure of so many hundreds of thousands of people. And I would have died in that ring on that night, no problem. If it meant winning, I would have died, no problem. I was fucking, that was my mindset. And I was, you know, I stripped a lot of weight, and no excuse, I signed on. It was my fault for signing on that weight division. I should have been smarter and gone, I can't do this weight anymore. Because I had my last fight at super middleweight when I lost my rematch against Bayer in Germany in March, you know, 15 months prior to that. Yeah. And I had to struggle. I struggled hard to do that fight then. So then fast forward, I'd grown, I'd, you know, filled out. So the weight was a real issue. And I was a skinny Roo Dog as was. And the emotional, you know, baggage that I was taking into the ring with just so much, I guess, just sadness around what happened with our family, and then added that the massive amount of pressure. Like I just felt every one of those fucking tradies that took their belt off and bought a slab went home watched me fight on a Wednesday or a Friday afternoon. I felt the pressure of every single person in the country wanting me to be victorious. You know, every single person in that stadium that was on my side that was going for me, I felt the pressure of them. Every person at home, the millions that watched at home, pubs and clubs around the country, I felt the pressure of every set of eyeballs as when I got in that ring. So when Chock got in the ring, it was the first time I'd actually ever seen the bloke. Imagine, you know, so that's fucking
trying to light the world. Yeah.
And it's the first time for him, but in fairness to me, but Chock had been in big occasions. He'd fought in front of bigger people than I had. He'd been in big games, like fucking massive games in NRL. So he'd been on these big stages a lot more than I had. So he was calm. He was relaxed. If I was watching what was going on in the press conference, the weigh-in, the lead-up, the last 2 or 3 weeks before the fight, I'd have put my money on Chock. If I was now watching, knowing what I know, I'd go, Chock got this green bloke's too uptight. He's going to be too uptight.
But you are intense. An uptight character, but just below the surface, there's so much intensity to Danny Green that people probably just don't get. You probably self-describe yourself, kittens, I'm nuts. You know, in terms of, hey, and
you know the thing is, my kids laugh at me. I think I'm mellow.
You are. There's
I think I'm mellow.
Okay.
My wife goes, you're fucking crazy. You really are crazy.
A mellow nut. A creative type. You so are.
Chock put on a clinic. You know, I get people now go, oh, yeah, we won that fight. So you didn't fucking watch it, mate. So, you know, get the fuck away from me. And so I get frustrated with that. You know, I don't say that, but that's what I feel like saying, mate, you never watch that fight. You're ignorant. Chock won the fight. He put on a beautiful display. I mean, I wasn't dangerous on that night. I wasn't particularly dangerous, but I was dangerous enough. Like, I wanted to win. I wanted to hit him. I wanted to hurt him. And, like, the same way I wanted to hurt every opponent. I don't maliciously have intent to hurt them. I want to hurt them because that's my job. Yeah. I want to wear you down. I want to fuck you up in there. But I don't want to hurt you. If that makes sense, you know. It's not personal. And so Chock could see me coming from yesterday, and it was a particularly hard fight for Chock. You know, it was a pretty standard straight up and down fight for him, although I was still pretty dangerous. So I had a little bit of power in the shots every now and then. I was very readable when Chock, you know, fought a very, very professional fight. He didn't make many mistakes. He didn't take many risks, and he did what he had to do, and he threw some really crisp shots. And that was it. It was a great performance on his behalf, considering how much pressure was on him as well. There's a fuckload of pressure on Chock, and he performed. This is Rocked.
And you say you felt that pressure, and I know you say no excuses, but I don't think people understand the magnitude of what a tough weight cut does to people. So explain to the listeners what the physical implications of that pressure and that weight cut had on you in the ring. Did you feel you were slowing down? Did you feel like you didn't have enough gas? Was your power gone? Where were you at physically?
I remember I was in Homebush, the Novotel in Homebush. I went out there for about a week before the fight just to get away from everything in the city, just to try and chill, you know. I remember having baths late at night, and I was having really, really hot baths every night for the last 2 weeks because I had to sweat off the little bit of salmon that I had and a little bit of sprinkling of salad. And that was all just steamed salmon, a little bit of salad, maybe a tiny bit of steamed potato. No. Just for carbs.
Yeah.
And I'm running on empty, and I'm trying to drop weight. So I had a body scan, like a DEXA. There's a DEXA machine. But back then they were pretty new. Scan goes over, it takes a readout of your bone density, muscle density, and fat density. And we worked out that once you get down to this weight, Greeny, you're going to have to, this is like a month out. Once you get down to this weight, you have to shed this much muscle. So I was about 2 weeks out, I had another scan. So, Roddy, your body's got to basically go catabolic. You've got to eat yourself. You've got to start eating 4 kilograms of your own muscle because you're down to 3% now. 3.5%, 4% you're on now. By the time you get to the fight, you'll be at, you know, 3%, maybe less than 3%, which is starting to draw fat from your vital organs, which is really dangerous.
Absolutely.
So I was really running on empty as far as gas and energy and fat goes. So I have these hot baths. They were so hot. And I get out of the bath. I was so hot that when I get out of the bath, I just sit in the edge of the bath. I could only stay in there for like 15 minutes max because it was fucking boiling. And I'd get out there and I could have had a less hot bath and stayed in there longer, but I'm impatient. So I just cooked myself and then just jumped out and sat at the edge of the bath and then just sat there and just sweated for like next 15, 20, the sweat just poured out of me. I then wiped myself off, have a cold shower, stop sweating, and then weigh myself, right, yeah, cool, can go to bed. Have a little sip, go to bed and wake up the next day and do it all again. But my I dieted for 5 months. When I say diet, I watched what I had to eat. I was very careful with what I was eating for 5 months before that fight. It's fucking a long time. Mm. And then, you know, some days I'd get up and I'd have a little bit of porridge, a tiny bit of porridge with skim milk, made mostly just water, water and a tiny bit of sugar just for sweetness and just give me a bit of a lift. Smash that, black coffee, maybe a boiled egg, you know, a midday boiled egg and some salad, and maybe a piece of fruit, maybe a banana. And then that afternoon, maybe I might have a banana before training. But I'm talking, when I go to train, I'm talking smashing out, you know, really, really heavy sessions, hard, heavy sessions. And then dinner might have been a decent piece of salmon, or lunch might have been a decent piece of salmon, maybe 200 grams. And then some steamed veggies. I was big on steamed broccoli and steamed cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and asparagus and that kind of shit, but only very, very small portions. So as the fight got closer, the portions went down, the training sessions went up. And then what it does to your mind is it stresses your mind out, because all day, every day now, you're focused on, fuck, I'm hungry, but I can't eat anything. Then I've got to go train and you can't sleep because you're dehydrated. Like, I was dehydrated for a fucking week, but you can't sleep when you're dehydrated. It's difficult. You toss and turn, and then, you know, you get up in the middle of the night, you feel like you're going to go for a piss, and you go for a piss because it's nap, because I normally used to go for a piss, and you piss and you're pissing out, I don't know, maybe 50 mils. Mm. And it's like it's the color of a stout. Mm. You know, it's a fucking dark beer because you're that dehydrated. And then the morning you wake up, you can hardly open your fucking mouth because it's so dry. You brush your teeth and have a bit of water and then drink a bit, and you might have, you know, I might have breakfast, might be 200 mils, 300 mils of water, maybe 400 mils of water, and then a little bit of porridge as well. And then do it again day in, day out until I get to the weigh-in. And then at the weigh-in, I weighed in 75.9. And I walk around now at 80. 89 kilo when I wake up, 88 and a half, 89, 90 kilo, depending. And I'm still in
good
shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what my body should be. But this is, it was a long time ago. But yeah, I didn't have very much weight to lose. So it stresses you out.
Yeah.
Because you're like, fuck, man. And you weigh in, you might be a kilo over. Like, fuck, where that? I didn't eat anything. Yeah. Your body, there's no wrong reason to what your body's doing on a certain day. And it was hard, but the main thing was the pressure was that was less. The pressure was for me was, fuck, man, I don't want to let people down. Mm. I don't want to let them down. And kind of, yeah, going into that fight, I probably look back and go, I almost talked myself out of it, you know, almost talked myself out of it, because it was just everything was just coming in on me and the pressure was fucking heavy. But I'm like, I'm maintaining game, poker face. Yeah, cool, I got this, no problem. But it was the pressure was just so immense. Like I don't know how I didn't have a fucking stroke. You know, I was under that much stress. It's heavy. Pressure. And then have to get in there and then get there and have to fucking fight.
Oh yeah, the fight. We forgot about
the fight.
The fight at the end of it.
And weight stops trains, weight stops horses, and weight eventually stops humans. But that's a wonderful, intricate insight with a few expletives on just what it takes in the lead up to in the lead up to the biggest pay-per-view that Australia has ever put on.
This is Rocked.
Greening, how many pay-per-views did it do?
That'll always be a mystery to the public. But we know that, you know, Coda and I know that that'll never be eclipsed. And we're talking back in the day when you had Foxtel, Fox Sports, pubs and clubs, and Foxtel, which is Main Event, almost in competition with each other. They weren't working together in unison. Then you had News Limited, the papers, who weren't under the one banner. Whereas now they're all under the one banner, right? They're all pushing each other.
Yes, you know, very much.
Someone stubs their toe, it's fucking reported about across all of them. Fox Sports, News Limited, radio that they own, and TV, Channel 9. It's all, mate, they got a fucking dream run. Back when we had it, you were getting your face in the paper for a reason. And because there was only papers, there wasn't his online stuff, and not there is today. So everything just is, you know, they got a dream run, these folks today, and good luck to them. But back then when we did it, we didn't realize just how crazy the deal was going to be. And we did the deal and written on a fucking napkin.
It was done on a napkin.
Famous,
that's so
old
school. It was done on
the
napkin.
It was done on a napkin at a cafe in Urquhart. Justin Malikas, my guy, and me sat down, and Chuck was never in the negotiations. Don't know why, and that's up to him. But you know, I know why, because it wouldn't have been much of a fucking negotiation going on with me and Chuck was here together at that time. it would have been stupid. Coda and yeah. Justin and I sat down and we did the deal one day at the back cafe in Urco, just off what's the main drag in Urco, JJ? Oh.
Erskineville Road, and I reckon I know where you're
going. Sophia's, is it?
I reckon it might be Cafe Sophia's.
It's on the corner and there's a cafe, there's a little bit back.
There's a pub. I think the Rose is just next door. There's a pub next door.
Yeah, the Rose. I think Scott Leach, the president of the AHA, owns that. Anyway. And then the next day we formalised it. And it took 20 minutes and we formalised the deal that we'd done, and it was written on a piece of paper.
Not a napkin.
No, it was done on a napkin. It was done on a serviette, I think, at the cafe. But then the next day, Coda came around to my joint in Utah and we formalised it on a piece of paper ripped out of a pad.
Wow.
And that was it. And there was no contracts. Fucking bang. We agree on that? Yep, bang. Cool. Shake hands. Done. Catch you later. And then 10 years later, when we did the rematch, we did the same deal, but it was done on a handshake. There was no contracts. It was fucking.
So the greatest rivalry in sport, the actual negotiation was pretty easy.
Piece of cake.
Wow.
Piece of cake, mate. Coda held his word. We held our word. That was it.
So where do you stand when you see all this political drama that goes on in the boxing world now, where people can't agree to this and they turn back on contracts and they backflip? As an old school fighter, where do you stand when you see that stuff going on in the media?
It disappoints me. It's the old school ways are, unfortunately, they're whittling away, which is sad. You know, like, JJ, you're 26 and... You know, like I'm 48, Kitten's are 47. You know,
okay.
Like,
I'm going to say it. I'm 52, but I'm going on 48.
Oh, yeah, you got me.
Yeah, I know. I look 42, but anyway, I won't digress.
Yeah, you're doing well.
Yeah, thank you.
So you know, back when we were doing things, you know, it's totally different to what we got nowadays. You know, I like the simplicity of how it was before. It was just far more simpler, far more. There's a lot more. A lot more gentlemanly behaviour going on, a lot more respectful behaviour going on. Whereas today, there seems to be, you know, there's the ability for a bit more scurrilous behaviour, which is no good.
This is Rocked.
You broke this bloke's JJ Rocker. You broke his heart twice because he was also a Roy Jones Jr. fan. I want to take you to that fight, Acer Arena in Sydney, and you could cut the atmosphere with a knife. And again, Men at Work, out comes the anthem. I mean, I don't mind if it goes for half an hour, but there's people telling me that it was half an hour. How long did we keep him waiting? I could listen to the song all day. I sent he and Nina a clip of me singing in the car the other day.
Of course,
it's a beauty.
Of course you did.
It's a ripper, mate. Made my day. It lit my day up. And your dog's sitting there just looking at you, just loving the entertainment. But I remember walking to the ring, and that was the most relaxed that I had ever been for any fight in my entire life. I had no, and I don't know why, but I was just, I remember Howard Foster, the referee, when he gets in the ring and he taps on ball guard and then gives me a smile and says something like, you're good to go. I said, man, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to rumble. I said, I'm ready to rumble. I was genuinely smiling. Fuck, man, I'm right where I want to be. This is right where I want to be, right here, right now. This is the best. But before we left, because I'd prepared,
Were we in Griffith about 2 weeks earlier? We were.
Remember the bloke who picked me up in the Ferrari, Frankie someone? I spoke to him yesterday because the great Graham Gubby Allen, the football manager, premiership football manager magician, he's down in Griffith, got a business down there. So I spoke to the guy yesterday in Griffith and we had a laugh about it. But, yeah, we did a tour of Griffith, of all places. They paid a stack to get us to go down there and we went to and watched an amateur show where Stevie, the serial killer, Wills fought.
Correct.
But
Billy Calabria, because I'd be remiss if we didn't make Billy Calabria pulled that all together for us. A beautiful winery, West End Estate Wines. Jeffrey will be happy we did that too. And he was loved.
Billy just bought out another winery yesterday, Frank told me. Just bought someone else out down there. I'm not sure who it was. But anyway, Billy's doing really well.
That's fantastic. Loves the sport. The wines are on the way. All right. Some to the Green, some to Fennec, some to the Rocker family, and some to the Warren family. He's a beautiful man. And
but he's I don't a want good fellow, Billy.
So you did that 2 weeks prior, and then the crowd.
That was about 8 weeks prior.
Okay, but look, you didn't really have to correct me there. Never let the truth get in the way of a good story. however, now fast forward, I reckon you've made him wait for 30 minutes.
No, incorrect. All right. What was happening was there was a dispute between his guy, McGee Wright, who I'll be polite and say he's a prick, and my guy Justin, and McGee was saying, we're not coming out first. And you know, Green's coming out first, you know, and we that was in the contract. I was the champion. Roy, that's the deal, mate. I respect you, but you know what? I'm a fighter too, and I've got to fucking try and get over this bloke up here too. I'm not there to roll over for Roy Jones. I'm there to win. We all grew up idolizing Roy Jones, you, but mate, I'm here to win, not just to, you know, fuck around. And when he took out Jeff Lacy 4 months before that, he looked incredible. So no one gave me a chance. And then there was a big scrap going on. That was because of his guy, McGee Wright, pissing and moaning about Roy. And they were trying to move the goalposts on the contract. And they said, well, we're not coming out. We're like, cool, don't come out. We're not even warmed up yet. Because I knew that he had to go out. So when he goes out, I've got about 5 or 6 minutes I can fuck around with and start doing the pads and warm up with. So I'm cool. I'm just relaxing, chilling. And they're arguing, going back and forth. And so then when they eventually sorted it out, I didn't know what was going on. I just knew there was a delay because obviously Justin was smart enough not to tell me because I'd have, you know, probably maybe got a bit upset, but probably wasn't. I wouldn't care because I was in a good frame of mind. Anyway, move on. And then the song kicked in. My song from Men at Work, The Land Down Under, kicked in. And Main Event are kicking our door down, going, let's go, hurry up. And then we get there and my brother and Brooksy and Angelo and guys are with us and they're all fucking, let's go. We're ready to go out. We're right at the door. I said, hey, boys, hold on. I said, how long does this song go for? And they're like, oh, I don't know, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. I said, fuck, man, everyone just chill out. Good time, relax. just sit there and listen.
He's different, bro. He's different.
We did a little move. I was like, yeah, cool, yeah. And they said, all right, let's go have some fun, boys. And fucking the door kicked open. And then obviously I went from this to, you know, a game face, but I was just in.
You're in the right space.
I was in the right space, mate. I was in the right space. And that was. We spoke before, being in the right space is so important. Timing is so important. And for me to be in the right space here on that night, you couldn't have asked for a better time.
And Jeff, you know, Jeff Lacy, you mentioned before, it was only 4 months prior. He was an animal.
He beat the brakes off him. Roy beat the brakes off him.
You jump on Roy Jones. You jump on him. You molest him with a barrage of hands. And you said you're in the right space. Was it always the plan to jump him and jump him hard and jump him early?
We wanted to get a good start. Angelo, Hyder and myself had a really good game plan. And I noticed something in Biloxi. I always kind of study my opponents and study the game and try and work out what are these guys going to do and what are they going to try and do to me and what can I try and do to them. I knew Roy's a better fighter than me. I knew that my power was better. I had better power, physical one-on-one punching power. If we put it on a machine, mine's stronger than Roy's. I know that. But there's no point having that power if I can't hit it. And that's something Angelo was strong. It's really no point being strong. If we can't hit this guy, there's no point. So we're going to go to speed. So we really worked on speed. Roy gets his power from his placement and his impeccable timing. So he brings a lot of guys on. That's why he's so good. Like if he had a punching machine, he'd rattle it, but there'd be fighters out there that have a harder punch than Roy. But they don't have his time or his placement. That's where Chock was also got his power from. If Chock and I would sit there on a punching machine, I've got more power than Chock in that way. But his placement and timing is what hurt people. You don't need to punch someone hard to hurt someone. You've got to time it right and place it right. And that's where Chock had success with the guys. Some guys fucking eat up them like that. They drop like they've been shot, you know, because his timing was beautiful. And that was with Roy's strength. So I knew I had to try and, you know, get on him early. And I noticed in Biloxi, we had a press conference. Went over there when I fought and he fought in the same show. And I noticed the side of his skull was really thin. Like he was shaved and I could see these thin blue lines running through it, you know. And I was like, fuck. I'm looking at his head and he's talking. I'm going, fuck, that's thin. It looks like rice paper, you know. Like I said to H, I turned and I said, look at the side of his head, mate. And he's talking away. I said, I'm going to crack that like a fucking rice bubble, you know? Like when I crack it from the side of the head, I want to hurt it. And as fighters, we have to look for the openings and physiological, potential physiological weaknesses. And I identified that as a soft spot. I thought, fuck, if I hit that, there's no way I can't rattle him. I don't want to hit here. I want to hit here.
What you were doing was painting the picture and envisaging mental theatre of what you were going to do, talk yourself into what you were going to do, painting a picture for yourself. It'd be the same if you saw some weight around the midsection, but you just saw something. You said, I can hit that. I can hit that.
Well, I want to try and hit that. So for the whole time we prepared, we really tried to whack that, you know, in sparring, and also studied Roy, you know, intently. And notice when Roy got the ropes, Roy had a few intricacies in his style. Like he would get the ropes and he'd be left foot forward. This is my left hand. That's my left foot. And he would do that. And he would put his right hand out. Although his left foot was forward, he would reverse it on guys and he'd do that. And he'd wait for them to come in and he'd tap their left hand. So for an orthodox fighter, if I was Roy, I'd be tapping your left hand, tap, tap, tap. And then you'd take a shot and get frustrated and try and hook me. And he'd bring you on a shot, or he'd go bang, or he'd go bang.
Wow.
And he'd bring you on a shot. And I noticed that early. So I thought, you know what? I want to touch. So as soon as you touch someone somewhere, your brain automatically goes to it because you're touching it. Senses, nerves, bang, you touch it, you feel it. So I wanted to tap. I said, hey, there's a shot here. And when Roy got hit to the body, he would often get hit to the body with a jab to the body. He would hook off it. And then what he'd do is he'd go bang off it, and then he'd sit like that. For a split second, he'd sit like that, and then he would do that. So he'd cover up. So there was a little space in between that. I went, fuck, look, page. I'm telling you, watch this. Watch it again, again. So when Roy hooked, when he would jab, I wanted to touch his hand, that hand of Roy's that was out there. I wanted to tap that, touch, touch, touch. I want his brain to be on his right hand here. And then I wanted to smash the jab in and then pull back off the jab when he hooked me and then come over the top and hit him on the skull and the side of the ear here. And that was our plan. And we tried that. Would have been 1,000 times on the pads, on the bags, and in sparring. We had two sparring partners from America, Anthony Ice Greenwich from Miami, Florida, Miami, great guy, and sparred Roy Jones back in the day. Another kid called Cedric Agnew, who fought Kovalev for the world title and was unsuccessful. And he grew up emulating, idolizing Roy Jones Jr. So in sparring, we had these guys for 8 weeks before the camp, and we're getting them to try and do exactly what Roy does, even doing the little chicken dance and fucking throwing these crazy old hands, talking to me, trying to get in my head and upset me. Mm. And about a week before the fight, we sat down, we had lunch ago, and they said, Greeny. And we got on real well, and they're good dudes, and they gave me great work. And I looked after them really well. And they said, Greeny, your speed is now to the point where we think you're going to be able to hit Roy. You know, you're going to be able to catch him. You're going to catch Roy. You're going to be able to catch him. It's not when. It's a matter of when you catch him. You're going to catch him. Your speed will really improve. That's what we worked on. So it gave me great confidence. They didn't say you're going to win. They said you're going to catch him. You're going to be able to catch this guy. You know, you got a chance. So I knew that going into the fight, and I knew I had to jump on him early. I just didn't realize that it fucking happened in the first minute and a half of the fight. It was just like, wow. And to be fair, Roy is a great fighter. I don't tell Roy's shoelaces up, you know, but I can beat someone on my night. And that was the beauty of what happened that night, is a guy come to Australia, physically was in great condition, mentally thought he was coming out for a cruise. Yeah, it'd be a tough fight. This green guy can punch, he can fight okay, but I got him. It's easy. Because he'd already signed the rematch with Bernard Hopkins 3 weeks before he flew to Australia.
Mm.
So I knew this. So I had a lot of confidence going into that fight. If I jump on this guy, that's my best chance, is jump on him and try and catch him early.
It's fair to say that I told you, Greeny, he's a thinker.
Yeah, he's absolutely a thinker.
He spends a lot of time. God bless him. The creative, what is he? A soft nut. A creative, ah, dear. A mellow nut, rather.
This is Rocked.
Well, I mean, look, there's the Bayer fight. There was the old saying, you've got to knock a German out to get a draw. Mm. That's where we should have got that first world title. Bayer wins the second fight and does it well. The story just goes on and on and on. Antonio Tarver comes to town, and we know the story there. But
cleans my cage out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. mate, but more so, it's been a great Australian story. I suppose we'd like to touch on the present before we let this man do what he does. He's coming to us from the Green Gymnasium. This is the home gymnasium. He's doing brilliantly well with 12-round fitness. He goes to Queensland for a couple of days and then has to do 2 weeks of lockdown when he gets back to Western Australia. But don't start me. I go on a rant when we talk about that space, that COVID space. I did want to touch on something with you. I want to touch on Tim Zhu. I want to touch on Tim Zhu. I want to touch on the heavyweights as well before we let Greeny wander off. And I would like you to direct us in the area that you will. But, mate, just quickly, the Coward Punch campaign, congratulations on behalf of so many all around Australia. Where did that start? Where did it originate? Whose idea was it?
It started in Perth, and it was kind of an idea of mine that I said, look, you know, let's do something about this. This is disgusting. A young kid in Perth was, I think he was 17, was cracked. Didn't even know the guy hit him from behind. Was at a park. You know, this fucking scumbag was drunk or high and hit him, and the kid died. So, like, let's try and do something about this. This, you know, young blokes may look up to what I'm doing in the fighting, in the boxing ring. They might think that I think that shit's cool. It's not. I don't think it's cool one bit. I want to flip it on its head and let them know that I think it's very uncool. It's disgusting. It's weak. It's cowardly. Mm. And so I hate seeing CCTV footage of blokes being knocked out. Just I've always hated seeing it. Mm. I don't mind fighting. I don't mind. I think violence has a place in society. If I was to say to someone, mate, you do that and you're going to get a slap on the wrist or potentially a fine, or you're going to get possibly, you know, a severe beating, I think the cautiousness in them doing that would be higher, way higher than a slap on the wrist or a fine. If I said to someone, mate, if you kill someone, then you're going to pay with your own life. I think we need to start getting fucking medieval on some people in this world and start setting a precedent, because it's this soft approach is not working. It's just not working. And that's why the Scouts Punch thing is kind of important to me, because it's anti-violence, but it's violence. It's cowardice. It's more cowardness, not such violence. It's weak people doing weak things to innocent people, which upsets me and upsets us all. And there's nothing tough or strong about it. And so I just wanted to try and make a difference, and we made an ad and it got out there, and push come to shove, and, you know, 9 years later, here we are. And we've got had some government funding, and, you know, people go, oh, it's, you know, you get paid to this. I don't get paid a cent. I've paid shitloads of my own money to create the ads, the time that I've spent away from my businesses, time away from my kids and my family that I've invested into this thing, and not received one single cent. And never will receive a cent, because it's not about money. But we received government funding to make more ads, to get a piece of research done from the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine, which is coming out soon on and which will help us enable us to potentially put the program into schools, into the curriculum, to try and educate young blokes, mainly young blokes. I just see so many, and particularly with social media today, so many kids think that it's tough and cool to just go and pick on someone or whack someone that doesn't even know it's coming or that doesn't deserve it or doesn't need it. It's just, it fucking annoys me.
This is Rocked.
Tim Zhu is making the headlines. He fights Dennis Hogan, who has danced for a chance at two world title shots, perhaps at the pointy end of the career, respectfully. Tim Zhu goes up another level, though, and puts on a skinny Hussein body-snatching performance. It was wow. You talked about boxing DNA with Anthony Mundine. Tim Zhu dripping in boxing DNA. I know he wants to be Tim, but did you see a little bit more of the father the other evening?
Oh, look, with all respect to Tim, it is what it is, mate. You can't deny your father's genetics in your disposition and how you fight. There was one right hand that he threw a jab, probably towards the end of the fight, and he's gone, bop, bop, bang. He threw his right hand, kind of come deep. Remember, Costa would go, and he punched down.
Yes.
Punched down. He missed Hogan with a punch, but around it, and everyone went, what are you doing? Went fucking said, check it out, that's his old man.
Yeah.
It's like exactly like that. He missed him with a shot, but it's like, wow, looks exactly like him. And it's a real compliment to have, you know, if someone was to compare me to Costa, they're like, fuck. So I get where Tim's coming from. He wants to forge his own path, etc. But there's no denying that there are similarities in their styles when they fight. So it was an impressive performance. He's exciting to watch. I like watching him. I like his humility away from the ring. He's just, you know, lets these do the talking. He doesn't really say a lot of shit. It's positive what he says. And I think it's growing each fight. I'd actually like to see the Zarafa fight. I think that's an interesting fight. I think domestically, I think that's the fight I'd like to actually watch. I think that's a really, really interesting fight.
I think it's a very interesting fight. I just think he's getting better and better and better. And some will say, well, he tested himself against Hogan. I think Zarafa, considering that he may not be able to travel, go to the States and get a world title, yeah, more so Danny, the businessman that you are, and Jacob, it makes money. Zarafa Zou makes money here in Australia.
We're prize fighters. You fight for the biggest prize. And anyone who says, oh, you fight for the money, you're like, yeah, you know what I do, don't you? You know, like, of course I fucking do. That's what a prize fighter is. You know, we fight to get paid, and we get into brain damage to get paid, and you want to capitalize on that brain damage that you're going to get. It's not a fucking if, you're going to get it. So you might as well make the most of it. And I just think domestically it makes so much sense. It's a good fight to watch. People want to see it. There's a lot of noise around it. And I think it will be a good matchup. It'll be a real good test for Tim. I don't know, you know, I'm not going to comment on who I think is going to win. I just think it's an exciting, interesting fight that I think, you know, Australia should have, because of COVID and the possibilities of not getting guys come out, not going to go overseas. It's there. It's just ready made. But I think Tim is definitely improving. He's got a lot more to go. Mm. Yeah, there's no, he's nowhere near his best. He's exciting.
Right,
he's,
it is scary. And remember, he hasn't had, I'll be wrong here on the exact number, he hasn't had 357 amateur fights. So at 26, Danny, he's a baby still. And it's he's fresh. He's fresh. And it's scary.
He's a pup.
Yeah.
You can see his body starting to develop, to get, you know, retain a bit of muscle.
Yeah.
You know, his body work. And I said to my son, I said, buddy, you have a look at that bloke the other night, Tim fight. I said, what did he do? What was impressive? And he said something. I said, no. I said, his body work. I said, not many guys, not many young fighters now are really working the body. Brock Jarvis is a very good body puncher. And the Maloney.
Your man, Brocky.
But he is, you know, his assault on the body is evident. You can just see him. He wants to hit the body more than he does the head. The Maloney boys are very good body punchers. Yeah. You know, for me, I really, my favorite punch was a body punch. I like to hurt guys to the body. I loved hurting people to the body. And I guess I watch replays of my old fights and I see so many shots that the commentators never picked up, but that, well, the cause of the rot that started, when the rot set in with the opponent, was a body shot. So I tell my son, I said, buddy, if you're going to be a fighter, you're going to be a vicious body puncher. You're going to hurt people and you're going to take their heart, you know, break their fucking heart. And that's what being a good fighter is, you break their heart. And that's what Tim Zou's displaying. In his last two fights, he's broken their heart from the body. And I love watching that.
JJ, the date, as we are about to drop Rocked Round 15, Mark Warren with JJ Rocker and the Green Machine, Danny Green from Perth, WA. The heavyweights are in town. Lucas Brown, Big Daddy, Season Pro, yep. Big Banger, the G-Train. Paul Gallen, who I believe now is a genuine heavyweight,
yep,
who had 36 years of age, young in heavyweight terms because he's fresh. And we know what a fitness machine he was in rugby league. When are they on? When is that fight on?
Wednesday, the 21st of April in Wollongong.
So that's next Wednesday.
Correct.
Next Wednesday. Brown versus the G-Train. Paul Gallen. How do you see the fight, Danny?
I think Paul wins just because Lucas hasn't fought for so long. You know, I really don't know. I haven't really seen much. To be honest, I haven't really paid a great deal of attention because I haven't seen much about what's going on. So I think Gal might just be a bit too much for him inside and just outwork him, I think. That's how I see this fight going down. But I'm more interested in talking about Sonny B. Williams and Barry Hall.
Well, hang on. Stay right there. Well, Nine Radio, Nine Television, Nine Newspapers, they'd like to know too, because Sonny Bill and G-Train, they're both working for the Nine Network. So can you tell us, Is that fight going to happen? Will Paul Gallen and Sonny Bill Williams dance the much anticipated fight that is definitely pay for punch?
Well, you got Sonny Bill Williams, who was a rugby union and a rugby league juggernaut. And then you got Paul Gallen, who's a rugby league superstar. So you've already got those codes wrapped up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But you're missing the AFL.
Mm-hmm.
Then you bring in a 6'3" behemoth in Barry Hall, who brings the AFL. He's a premiership captain. He's an All Australian. He's a superstar of the sport. So he brings in the rest of the country. You've already got NRL wrapped up with Sonny Bill.
Yep.
You've got ARL wrapped up with Sonny Bill. Paul Gallen doesn't bring much else as far as I'm talking mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking the boxing people, the sporting people. I'm talking mainstream. Who are the people who you're trying to attract? That's sewed up with Sonny Bill. And the ARL as well.
Yeah, the NRL.
Bring in the AFL. Yep. So you bring Barry Hall across to it and it just goes the whole country.
Yep.
Top the East Coast with Sonny Bill, the top half of the East Coast, you know, middle, whatever the population is. But you bring Barry Hall into the equation. You put those two guys on a poster. You drive them down the highway, you see those two men on a poster. Knowing that they're going to, you know, punch on, it's pretty exciting, and I think it's going to be a spectacular event. We're building it. We're confident we're going to get this fight on. What month this year we don't know, but I think that's a more exciting prospect because they're two household names, and Barry proved that he's a fighter last time. I firmly believe that Barry Hall won their first fight.
I think it was that close to a draw. It's not funny, but I'm happy with the decision. I got massive respect for Barry Hall. If it's six rounds, what I saw, Barry's going to be good for his first outing. You can see he's blessed with skills. The first couple of rounds, he was beating Paul to the jab. He was doing everything nicely. He'll be better for the run. He'll be much better for the run.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, for us to want to put that fight together, it's gonna be pretty big. It's one there where the country will go, wow, that's on, that fight's on. It's huge. So I wish Gallen and the other fellow, Lucas Brown, the best. I don't know who's gonna win. What are your thoughts, JJ?
It's interesting because I think the more the media ramps this up and what's happening now, boxing's coming to the mainstream, which is fantastic, but it also tends to take away from the sport sometimes. I think you're stupid if you think Paul Gallen's a rugby league player that's dabbling in boxing. He's a legit Australian heavyweight now,
and
there is no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
As to Danny's point, I think Barry Hall's a legit Australian heavyweight, and I think Sonny Bill's a legit Australian heavyweight also.
Full respect, I still think Barry's learning, but he did... How much experience did he have as a younger lad in or around the gym? He has got amateur experience, hasn't he, Danny? Barry?
Yeah, I think he won a junior Australian title. He had about 11 or 12 fights, I think. So he had a bit of experience, but he's always kept his eye in. He's always been boxing.
Yeah. I love the thing about Gallen and Hall. They're both singing from the same songbook. They said, they both do not want to disrespect the sport of boxing. And absolutely, that's lovely. That's lovely from both of those gentlemen.
I think what you say is right, JJ. You know, the three of them, you know, probably the least experienced. So Gal's a professional boxer now.
Yep.
And so, you know, he's finished his rugby league. He's a professional boxer.
Yep.
Sonny Bill's had six fights and soon seven or eight, nine, ten fights. So then, you know, he'll be classed as a professional boxer.
Yep.
What do you need? Like, you know, he's had six fights. He said... There's pros out there that have had two fights that have been called pros. So what's the difference? And Barry's had one professional fight, but he's always been, you know, he's a boxer. Barry's a boxer, and so he just hasn't had as much experience as he probably would have liked to have or could have. So you know, we're trying to rectify that. We're going to rectify that. So yeah, I agree with what you're saying. They're three professional heavyweights, which there's a lot of excitement moving forward in the country. You know, with some big matchups down the track. And underneath that, we put the Code War on. We put Barry and Gallen on down in Melbourne.
Yeah.
We put that on for one reason, to showcase the Maloneys. So Andrew Maloney, we're able to give Andrew to put Andrew Maloney on in a world title because Foxtel didn't see fit to put the Maloneys on in a world title fight, which was perplexing. Yeah. It's a young Australian. He's fighting for a world title here in Melbourne, his hometown, yet it's not worthy of a TV broadcast. I thought it was crazy. Anyway, so we put the Barry Hall, Paul Gallen fight on, supporting the world title fight, and it worked. You've got so many eyes on sets. Andrew Maloney was able to win the world title in a really good scrap. And for me, it was, and my partner Anthony Bell was a fantastic success because we enabled a guy like Andrew Maloney to win a world title here in Australia in his own backyard, and that's what you want. For me, that's one of the prouder moments of my career. Having put that fight on, there's a great photo the next day. Andrew standing in front of Federation Square with his world title belt up, with the big Federation Square in the background. I've got the photo. I just haven't had the time. I haven't had to go fucking space cadet to put it up on my wall. But for me, that's gone up on my wall because that's a big moment in my boxing career as a promoter now. This is Rocked.
How quickly could you tell us about the James Toney sparring session? If you're listening to us in Hollywood or Vegas, wherever you're joining us, maybe it's London town, maybe you're in Perth, maybe you're in Sydney. This is Rocked Round 15. Mark Warren, JJ Rocker, Round 15. This is Rocked, and you drop the E in Rocked. You go to rock.com.au or wherever you get your favourite podcast, but you knew that already because you're listening. So James Toney, tell me the story.
I was in Los Angeles. It was 2004. I was in between fights. I think I was the WBC interim super middleweight champion. I won against Luka in Montreal, and I was preparing for a fight. And I was over there in LA with Jeff, and we were sparring. We had some Russian guys lined up to spar, some young Russian guys, so to get more experience. Went over there, and then Jeff goes, "Hey, Grinny, Tony's a wild card. Do you want to spar?" And he shouldn't have asked me if I want to spar James Toney. Like, I'm a super middleweight, and James Toney is a heavyweight who we know is jacked up to the eyeballs and the juice. 4 months later or 5 months later when he won the world title off John Ruiz, WBA heavyweight world title, he was stripped because he tested positive steroids. But we knew that because someone in the gym told us, someone very close to his camp goes, "James can't fit his head inside the head guard because the steroids." You know, we fucking knew this. Finnick asked me, he says, "You want to, you know, spar the bloke?" I said, "Of course I'll spar him. No worries. What do I want to say? No." So, yeah, fucking he's a legend. Love James Toney. His fighting styles. I mean, anyway, go to the gym and he wasn't there. So Freddie Roach says, "Where's James?" You know, he goes, "Oh, sorry, guys. He's not here today. Can't make it. But, you know, he'll be here tomorrow." So, okay, cool. No worries. So we go back tomorrow the next day and I turned down sparring for this Russian kid. The next day I turned down again, went down a walk and he wasn't there. I'm like, "Oh, far out. Where is he?" He said, "Oh, can't make it today, but he'll be here on Thursday." So, oh, fuck. So tell James if he doesn't come on Thursday, I'll turn his lights out as a joke. Yes, James, lights out, Tony. Yeah, so I said, as a joke, take the piss and we'll catch you later, Freddie Radio. Catch, you know. Freddie's either told James, this is what this Aussie said, to gym up to get the lazy prick into the gym.
Yeah.
Or he said it as a joke and James Toney took it the wrong way or whatever he did. But anyway, I was in the gym on Thursday. We're moving around, sitting there, bouncing around. I'm just shadow boxing, waiting for James Toney. And he walks in, wildcard gym, and he's huffing and puffing and looks at me. He said something to the, I don't know what he said, but it was something like, "What the fuck are you looking at?" I'm like, well, I didn't know what to do. I was like, I was embarrassed, but I was nervous, but I was like laughing because like, I got a fellow fucking nutter here. Yeah. He goes to the toilet, he kicks someone out. He can hear me. He goes, "Get out of my fucking can." Someone was in the toilet in the corner. He goes, "Get out of my fucking can." Fucking someone gets out there. You know, if they weren't shitting already, they'd already done. They got out of there real quick. You know, you get in the ring, we start sparring. And then he's notorious for knocking people out. James Toney is notorious for putting people away. Amateurs, people that are beginners that aren't that crash hot, he's notorious for putting away. So I start sparring with bang, bang, and he nearly lifted my head with an uppercut. Anyway, I just stuck in his face and went seven rounds with him and we turned it on. And it was Freddie Roach who called it after seven rounds. Freddie said, "That's enough, that's enough." You can hear him say the tape. He called it. He said, "That's it, no more." And I kind of was like, I was keen to go again. I could have gone all day because I was pretty fit. And James was lazy. He's such a good fighter. He was so pumped up on steroids that he couldn't move. Yeah, he was just lazy. If he could have knocked me out, he would have knocked me out. Make no mistake, because I was in his face and I was landing fucking bombs on him. But they're my bombs. A bomb in his world is going to be a fucking scud missile. I'm going bang, 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 hooking into him, and he's going crack. Crack, and he's yelling and talking to me while he's getting clipped at the same time with my bombs. But, oh man!
Wow.
No, but we kept going. It was a lot of fun, and my nose is bleeding. He goes, "Oh, you know, look at his nose is bleeding. I'm busting his gut." But you count the punches and you look at the shots landed, I out punched him 2-1. But, you know, that's not saying that I'm a better fighter. That's not saying I beat James Toney, because James Toney would put me to fucking sleep. He's the man. He is the man. But I just had a great sparring session with him on that day. And remember the old boxing site called Max Boxing?
Mm.
Back in the day, there was a site called Max, M-A-X Boxing. That they had the thing that was back in the day, there was Fight News, Max Boxing, and about that was about it really worldwide. They were the biggest ones in the world. And they had a thing called Gym Wars. And they uploaded our video to their website and they called it Gym Wars. And ours was the very first one that was Gym Wars. And after that, you had Israel Vasquez and all the other greats back in the day putting their fights up. And I think Big Jacini was in there against one guy. And they had all these fighters. Raging fucking Bull. Had him on there. And so ours was the inaugural Gym Wars. That started that whole video viral thing of guys sending in mad sparring sessions of well-known fighters. And we were the first ones on it. And then since then, it's had a lot of press. And I get asked that all the time. But, you know, and the guy who actually videoed it was a guy, and he's a guy in America. I can't remember his name, but he was on Joe Rogan about 3 months ago talking about it. And they're talking about the sparring session. They go on for about 15 minutes talking about it. And this guy's going, oh, man, this guy served it up. He just fucking, this Danny Green, he got
nuts.
He got his ass handed to him. He got beaten up so badly. And then kind of Joe Rogan's kind of going, oh, really? And then he kept talking. This bloke keeps yapping and yapping and talking shit. And then Joe Rogan goes, really, man, this Aussie guy looks like he's going okay to me, you know, like if Joe pulls him up. But
We love Joe Rogan.
The man. He says it how it is. But anyway, that's the whole James Toney thing. It was a lot of fun. And I spoke to him. And then after, when it finished, I went over to James's spit bucket because he was talking all sorts of stuff, saying all sorts of things to me.
Right? He was going to go to his locker at one stage, was he?
No. So I went over to his corner with Freddie watching. Freddie said, that's it, man. We're calling up. And I said, you know, problem. And he had his spit bucket there on the side where it goes down into a tube in a bucket. I was going, spat in the bucket and then just kind of walked off as if to say, fuck you. Because he was giving me, you know, stick the whole time. There was a guy next door, his fella Kevin, go get my gun. Go get my gun. I'll shoot these motherfuckers. I'll shoot all these motherfuckers. Go get my fucking gun, Kevin. And Kevin's sitting there going, I'm not getting your gun, man. Just fucking chill out. So, you know, we're like, wow, what's going on here? It's pretty wild. And then when we left, I'm still like, fuck, I just sparred James Toney. I was on such a high.
Good.
I'm buzzing. Good. And I walk over and James is sitting there and he's talking to all these guys. He's talking and yapping because the gym filled up where it was sparring. It kind of just swelled and filled up. Anyway, I walk over and I thought, when I'm about to leave, I said, James, I went over to shake his hand and you know, just say, come on, man, fucking, you know, really appreciate the sparring. Fuck, you're a legend. Yeah. Thanks very much. It turns out as soon as he sees me, he's fucking mad. I love him. He starts going, you know, I'm this and I'm that, you're nothing, I'll do this to you. I said, oh, fuck. I said, mate, don't come then, mate. You're not welcome. We'll feed you the crocodiles. Fucking catch you later. And I ran out of there. I got out of there real fast. We went to a place on Sunset Boulevard called the it's next to the old height there.
The Sky Bar.
The Saddle Ranch.
Oh, well, yeah. Hey, Kittens has got a story there. I tamed a mechanical bull with the Raging Bull.
It's still there, mate. So, and the guy there, Billy, used to run it, and he knew we were fighters. And he came in, and he goes, oh, guys, you just missed it. James Toney and all his crew were just in here. They just left. But oh, thank goodness they left, man.
I went there. I went there with Angelo Haider, Elias Nasser, the Raging Bull, Vic Darchinian, and they had a bag. They had a speedball at the back of the room, which we put a fortune through, and then Haider said, Warren, you're going to tame that bull. I did method acting, and they'll tell you there's a video out there. I was pretty proud of myself. I did sustain a fractured pelvis, and then just to go along with the Australian thing, I just said, drop my pants, Warren. So I took the jeans down while he applied bags of ice to both thighs. We're going to stop the bleeding. And, oh, God, you've got to imagine the theatre and little Vic looking at me and Big L was crying with laughter.
Vic would have been disgusted.
He probably was, but we're doing it to put a smile on his face. I think you'll find it was after the Anselmo Marino loss. But they're great memories that you can't buy.
Absolutely.
I could talk to you about leaving the zoo, tacky fight. I think you fought a guy called Johnson. And then you went and married your beautiful wife, Nina, dressed as Elvis, married her as Priscilla. And I think...
She was just herself. She wasn't as Priscilla. I was Elvis, but she didn't buy into the whole Priscilla thing. She just got a wedding dress. But Elvis Presley married us.
Again, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. And I was busy, obviously, downstairs in the shark bar at the Mandalay Bay with it was a lady called Ivanka trying to buy me drinks that night, as you're well aware.
Oh, well, why wouldn't she? She's only human, buddy.
Anyway, that ship has sailed. And Danny Green, you're a marvellous human. It's been a good yarn. And how many days you got to go there in lockdown?
Come here. I got a couple of days. Come here, son. Say g'day.
Hello.
My little man, Archie.
Say g'day. Put your head in there. Put your head in there, buddy. Say g'day.
Hello.
Hey, Archie. That's, Mark
that's
Warren.
That's Kittens. That's JJ.
Hey, Kittens. Hey, JJ.
Hello, brother.
Archie. Look at the A. He's got some reach on him, too. Yeah, mate, couldn't you say he looks like a lovely kid? He'll straight away got some reach on him.
Yeah, exactly.
You keep doing good things. We love your work. We love the chat. And then we thank you for being a part of Rocked Round Number 15, the Green Machine, Danny Green. I think that was pretty cool stuff, JJ.
That was awesome. That's Australian bucket list stuff for me. So thanks again for the opportunity to talk to you, Danny, mate. Been a fan of you for years and will continue to be. You're a legend.
Much appreciated, JJ. And Kittens, thanks very much, buddy. And next time we do this, Kitten, join and tell me where the nickname come from.
That's easy. Bill Morty. A baby rabbit is a kitten. Oh, and Fennec means fellas, rabbit in Maltese. Pardon?
All the best, fellas. I really appreciate having you on. I enjoyed the chat. And, you know, any time you want to come back on and chew your ear off again, because as you can tell, mate, this is my life. I love talking about boxing, no matter what it is, where it is, who it is. I just love talking about it.
We're going to send you out a couple of pointers and hold just a word to put out there, Green Machine. Thank you, brother. Thank you.
See you, boys. Have a good afternoon. Thank you.
That was Rocked Round 15. JJ Rocker, unsurpassed, unequaled, unrivaled. A pleasure. Until next time.
As always.
It's bye for now. This is Rocked.